Ms. Hunt.
May it please the court, Hyland Hunt for Oceana. When Congress addressed the problem of bycatch in the nation's fisheries, it recognized a simple truth. You cannot fix what you don't measure. And so Congress commanded the agency to assess bycatch, that is, fish and other marine animals incidentally caught in fishing operations and discarded, often dead or dying. But Congress did not issue just a simple, open-ended command to assess bycatch. Rather, Congress required the agency to establish a standardized reporting methodology to assess bycatch and to promulgate that methodology in each fishery management plan, that is, through notice and comment rulemaking. Congress thereby prohibited the agency from assessing bycatch through ad hoc, discretionary, ever-changing ways. The agency's rule claws back the very discretion that Congress took away. The agency expressly reserves to itself the authority to jettison the standardized plan methodology.
But only in years when it is impossible to do it, right? I read your brief and I didn't get to where you are exactly. It seemed like they were saying, this is what we do if we can't carry out the plan we've established. Isn't that all they did?
You're right, Your Honor, in that
if that's the case, then what's wrong with it?
What's wrong with it is that the agency does not get to pick and choose which congressional mandates.
They didn't say they were going to do that. They said, if we can't do this, we have to prioritize. And I mean, what do you think they're supposed to do if they don't have enough money appropriated?
What they're supposed to do, Your Honor, is to establish a methodology. That is, say how they
They've
will
done
actually...
that. They've established a methodology. Now, you're saying that it's not adequate because they have made provision for years in which it's impossible to carry out the mandate.
No, Your Honor, we're saying they haven't established a methodology because the methodology
because
is
they've
illusory.
Made it, because they've put in the methodology a provision for what they do if the externalities make it impossible to carry out the mandate.
Well, what the agency refers to as external operational constraints are, one, not external, and two, not unforeseen contingencies that the agency cannot plan for now.
When the two times they've invoked, or the example they gave when they promulgated this was a budget constraint. Mm-hmm. So does the Congress appropriate money specifically for this program?
The Congress appropriates money for a variety of different funding programs mm-hmm. from which observers can be funded. But beyond that, the agency already has in place an industry-funded observer program that it could expand. It has the authority to meet its congressional command. This idea that a budget constraint is external is simply not true. Moreover,
Counsel, you're working in the government. Budget constraints are very external unless you're Congress. I've got all kind of judges around the country wanting all kind of things fulfilled, and they seem to think I can go to the hill and pick leaves off and do it. You can't do that. Budget constraints are very extreme. Were you aware that the government almost closed down recently?
I am aware of that, Your Honor.
You were aware of that. And you think they were supposed to be out there counting fish for free if they had no money from the government?
In fact, the observer program was designated as an essential government function that would have continued even had the government shut down, because it is that critical. But more to the point, Your Honor, the agency has the authority to fund an observer program, as Oceana and other commenters raised to the agency, at least partially through an industry-funded program, which it has done in the scallop fishery and which it has the authority to do with other fisheries. Moreover, these budget shortfalls are not unforeseen contingencies, but rather things the agency should have planned for when establishing the methodology it was to use.
I'm also a little bit confused on this issue. So the methodology they've picked is a 30% coefficient of variation, right?
That's the methodology they've described.
Well, you're not challenged. Let me put it another way. This lawsuit does not challenge that, right?
Your Honor, the lawsuit does challenge it to the extent that the agency did not adequately consider the environmental impacts.
No, I have that point, but I thought in fact, the government says that's really a challenge to the statistical methods, and you say, oh, no, that's not. That's a NEPA challenge. So I'm going to take you at your word and accept the idea that you're not challenging the methodology. Am I wrong about that?
That's correct. We are not challenging the 30% standard as arbitrary.
You're not challenging that as arbitrary and capricious. All right.
That's right.
So if the agency And what the agency says is we're going to use the 30% method unless we don't have enough money, in which case we're going to use another method, right? Would it satisfy you if instead they said, well, look, we know that we could pick a 50% coefficient of variation, and that we can do under any method because we have enough money for that, because that only requires a smaller number of observers. And that would be a standardized methodology, which wouldn't vary based on money. Would that meet your test? Would you rather them pick a worse methodology that costs less than a better methodology that costs more but that they can't always fund?
Your Honor, the 50% example would establish a methodology. We would accept that as established a methodology. We might still be here arguing that is an arbitrary and capricious way to assess bycatch because you cannot actually assess bycatch at that precision level.
What if their answer was we don't have enough money to do any better than that every year? What would you say?
Well, Oceana has proposed that, and it proposed in comments to the agency, that if there were actual budget shortfalls, and bear in mind the agency's budget has actually increased in each of the 4 years since the amendment was in place, but if there were actual budget shortfalls, that all it is asking is that the agency then specify how it will go about assessing bycatch. For example, it could use the sampling design in the methodology it describes, but then do a pro rata cutback of the observers. So that would likely achieve something less than a 30% CV standard, and Oceana has said, I mean, something not as good as a 30% standard.
So the problem here is that the fallback position is not itself a methodology. That is, you have a methodology, but that the fallback is totally discretionary? Is that? How would you describe the fallback position?
We would describe the fallback position as totally discretionary, and it's not just a fallback. It's something that the agency can decide to do, and it renders the established methodology illusory, just as if I made a contract and I promised.
I don't need the analogy. I got the point. It has no standard for determining when external considerations require it to not use the 30% CV.
No, Your Honor. The only thing the agency says is external operational constraints, which in point of fact are not entirely external to the agency. The agency decides how many resources are, quote-unquote, available for observers from what it can within its discretionary budget allocations. And it also...
There's no line item for this, I take it. Is that right?
Some funding, there are some line items for particular observer programs. So,
yeah, so those would continue if the line item were in the budget, right? That's not a problem to you, right?
Those
would not come under the external constraint sentence, right?
The problem is that those are line items that end up resulting in X number of observers that might have a very broad constraint on them, such as they must be used in New England, but the problem is that the agency is not setting out how it's going to allocate observers to boats. And if you look at the agency's own definition of standardized reporting methodology, which is at JA 589, one of the critical elements is a sampling design. And in basic terms, a sampling design means how we're going to allocate observers to boats. In every year that the agency has jettisoned this plan methodology, it's not simply about having only 6,000 observers when the methodology that's described would say 9,000. It's also that the agency reallocates according to its own completely discretionary criteria where those observers go. So in some cases, even though there is less money than ostensibly the described methodology requires, the agency puts five times as many observers as the described methodology would say, and sometimes it puts zero observers.
Five times in some particular area or five times overall?
Five times in one particular area. In other words, when the agency is on an ad hoc basis constructing a sampling design every year, and that is a critical element of a methodology. If you do not consistently measure across from year to year, you're not going to get consistent estimates that you can use. And, Your Honor,
your objection is not that 30% is what's required, and in years when they don't have enough money, they don't use 30%. Your objection is that in the years in which they don't have the money, they don't use anything. They don't have a methodology.
Yes, Your Honor. That's the objection, that they create a methodology at an ad hoc process outside the fishery management plan. Bear in mind that the fishery management plan is notice and comment rulemaking. it's a very particular process.
Actually, I thought your grievance was a little different. Maybe it's an addition. And that was that not just you've just referred to having no stated methodology for allocating observers when they can't do as much as the design would call for. But I thought part of the grievance from based on the brief was that that the premise that they don't have enough money is self-determined and not external.
That is also part of our grievance, Your Honor.
And that's because these are not funds that are specifically, at least in some fisheries, appropriated for the observer and for this function. Is that correct? Because if they were, they'd be subject to the anti-impoundment limitation. They'd have to be spent on this program.
That's right, Your Honor. To the extent that the line item requires them to be spent on this program or a different line item requires they be spent on something else, we recognize the agency can't take the line item money for something else and reallocate it, but the agency does have discretionary budget dollars, and more importantly, the agency also has the authority to implement industry-funded observers, which it did do in the scallop fishery, and which it did not consider as a solution to this supposedly intractable problem. The point here, Your Honor, and I see that I'm into my rebuttal time.
Well, you're saying that you said, but you're...
When we're asking questions, we'll continue asking questions.
Okay. So. Implicit premise of that...
The clocks control you, not us. Go ahead.
The implicit premise of that objection is that that they have an affirmative obligation to establish these industry councils in order to fund the program. They don't exist right now.
Your Honor, they do exist in the scallop fishery, which is one of the fisheries.
You're not concerned about that if that's your objection's already met there. But insofar as they have not set them up, you're saying they have an obligation to do so.
We're saying they have an obligation to establish a standardized methodology in the fishery plan that says how they're going to allocate observers that is adequate to assess bycatch. If the agency requires, and Oceana proposed other solutions, such as a pro rata cut in the observers, so we would still know what the agency was doing in years in which congressional appropriations didn't meet the methodology. But if the agency, as it seems to do, thinks that the 30% CB is what is required for a reliable bycatch estimate, therefore that is required to meet its congressional mandate, then yes, it needs to do what it needs to do in order to achieve that, which...
Well, with respect to funds that could have been allocated to this function, but were not, they have some discretion over the allocation, this fits within the line item, you're saying they should either allocate those funds or have some sort of predetermined formula that tells us why they haven't or why they've done so only to a limited degree. So couldn't they equally have a reason, give a state a reason for not setting up these councils, for instance, saying the industry can't afford it?
Your Honor, the agency never explained why it rejected the industry-funded observers.
Is that the gravamen of your objection, that they didn't explain it? And you would be satisfied with a non-arbitrary explanation?
No, Your Honor, we will only be satisfied if they actually establish what they will do to assess bycatch in the fishery management plan. With respect to the idea that the industry can't afford it, it bears mentioning that in the scallop fishery, it's essentially paid for in extra fish. The fishing industry is allocated additional fish to cover. Some fish are set aside and are then allocated some quotas to the boats that carry the observers.
These are fisheries that are in some danger of collapse, right?
Not every fishery that's managed is in an overfished in an overfished state, but it...
So at least in those that are overfished, it would seem reasonable not to set up a means for taxing the industry and letting them make it up by fishing still more.
Your Honor, even in... as long as the agency is allocating some fishing quotas, which I believe it does do, even in some industries in fishing that is overfished, there's still a certain level that can be taken. You can do a set-aside program. But regardless, the point is that Congress has mandated a standardized methodology.
How many other programs has Congress mandated for this agency?
Well, it also mandates that the agency engage in management functions such as setting allowable catch. And
do you have any idea how many other mandated functions they have under other statutes?
Your Honor, I don't have, like, a count off the top of my head, but I will tell you that
you
in a
search... You do understand that agencies have to allocate their resources and personnel among many mandates, right?
I do understand that, Your Honor.
And you used the phrase early in your argument that they can't pick and choose which mandates, but don't, in fact, agencies constantly, and departments, have to constantly pick and choose the prioritization of various mandates. Is that not the way a government works?
The government does work that way, Your Honor, but one way the government doesn't work is if an agency prospectively decides, when it is establishing a rule mandated by Congress, that it is going to simply declare it doesn't have the available resources. Congress sometimes...
So you're not insisting that they allocate the resources. It's that they have some sort of predetermined plan for, not allocate enough to hit the 30% target, but that they have some plan for what to do when there isn't enough money?
Your Honor, our objection is simply that they don't have a plan, that you can't pick up the fishery management plan and know what the agency will actually do to assess bycatch. Many of the things
because
Oceana
any given
proposed...
Year they may say we've decided to fund something else.
Right. The agency could, in theory, decide there are no available resources for bycatch and suspend the program altogether, as they've drawn up their discretion in this rule. And Oceana proposed many things that would not necessitate hitting the 30% CV, for example, a pro-rata cut of observers allocated according to the methodology. And there is a reason, Your Honor, that the methodology matters, which is that how you measure matters. Because the less reliably you measure, the greater the risk to the environment.
We have talked you way past your allotted time. We'll give you back a couple of minutes for rebuttal.
I thought there was something in the rule about pro rata cutbacks being one way of dealing with a shortfall. It's something to do with the back and forth between the agencies and the agency and the councils.
Is Your Honor,
I... around JA 511, 512, somewhere in there, I think.
Is that correct?
511 and 512 is where they describe the prioritization process, and they say that it's better than not having a consultation process with the councils. But the agency's rejection of the pro rata... of the pro rata allocation... comes at JA 952 to 953.
Okay. I'm looking at 948.
Okay, sorry.
The amendment establishes a process to provide, this is the bottom of the middle column, to provide the councils and the public with an opportunity to consider and provide input into the decisions regarding prioritization of ETSI observer coverage allocations. In any year in which external operating constraints would prevent the agency from fully funding the required coverage levels, the direct administrator and the research director will determine consult with the councils to determine the most appropriate prioritization, and then among the options, it seemed to me there was the possibility of allocating proportionately. Number two, there it is.
Yes, Your Honor. What that is that as part of the consultation process, the agency calculates the proportional pro rata reduction. It just sort of calculates it, and then it compares it to what it is actually proposing. It puts it in a chart. So you can see how the pro rata reduction differs. And that has varied wildly from what the agency has actually proposed.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Counsel. We'll hear from the government.
May it please the Court, Robert Lundman representing the federal defendants. As to external operational constraints, the rule and the amendment itself is very clear that it's not willy-nilly discretion on the behalf of the agency, but rather it has to be an external constraint, and the example it gives is a funding constraint.
What does that mean? So now you've just changed it from willy-nilly to funding, but what does funding mean? Is there a standard by which someone from the outside would know that in a given year you're not going to use the 30% CV approach? Or is it just that the secretary looks at the secretary's entire budget or the head of the agency looks at its budget and decides, well, this year we really would rather spend money on this program Program X rather than the fisheries program?
Before I try to answer that, the first problem with this, the difficulty in answering the question is they brought a facial challenge to the rule itself that announced this methodology. We don't have in the administrative record what's happened since then. Now they've attached
I'm asking you facially, what does the rule, say any restrict in any way the discretion of the head of the agency to invoke the rule of external constraint?
Is it willy-nilly by another name?
I don't think it is. It has to be external, so that's the...
What external you mean Congress giving them money, right?
Right. That's
okay, I got that part.
There's another example as well, but that's the primary one.
Okay, fine. Now, who decides and how do they decide whether they have enough money to do the 30% approach in any particular year?
Well, in the first instance, the regional administrator and then a member of the science director position make that initial decision. They then consult with
the... When you say they make that initial decision, do you mean that they look at the entire pot of money available to the agency and say, this year we don't have enough money? Or that's not what they do. That science guy doesn't do that.
Well, the regional administrator, for example, the 2010 example that they cited in their reply brief at pages 7 or 8 is instructive on this. It starts out with a discussion of, here's the funds we have available. They come from a variety of sources. Some of them are limited to ground fish monitoring, so we can only use that money for observers for ground fish. Some are limited just to the Mid-Atlantic. That's all the money we have for the Mid-Atlantic. Some are limited to specific other obligations. We look at those obligations. The first thing that's happened, though, is the methodology has been applied. The number of observers...
You are contemplating, or the agency is contemplating, a circumstance in which they don't have the money to do this kind of testing. Who makes the determination that there's not enough money? I mean, there are funds that are not line item funds. We don't need to go into the specifics of what they are, but who makes the determination that there aren't enough of them to do this? And how do we know from looking at the rule what the answer to that question is?
The regional administrator at the end of the day makes that decision.
Is there a methodology that we can discern from the rule by which he makes that determination?
There's two pieces to the methodology. First is the external constraint, the funding example. They do this analysis of funding. We have, not in the administrative record, but it's cited in the reply brief of Oceana, examples of that. Second, then, when they do the adjustment, they consider both the pro rata approach, that's the number two approach, that's on pages 5, 11, and 12, but there's a number of factors that they
You're
consider.
Now past the determination
okay.
that an adjustment has to be made.
Right.
You're telling me now how you make the adjustment after you've determined that you need to adjust something. Is there a methodology by which the agency can say it is not evident that there are external constraints that prevent us from doing the 30%? How do they get to that point before they start deciding what to do about it?
Well, there's no defined approach to that. Rather, what there has been post-administrative record in this case is four instances where the agency has actually gone about doing it.
So there is no, quote, standardized, unquote, methodology for making that determination.
Well, there's a standardized approach. There's no formulaic, rigid...
What's the standardized approach?
The standardized approach is the agency first calculates the number based on the methodology, the number of observers that would be provided. And the observers is one part of it, but it's the important part is the money-driving part. They calculate the number of observers. They then go to what Congress has appropriated that year. This many observers for ground fish, this many observers for New England, this many for the Mid-Atlantic.
How do they decide, out of the money that Congress has not given a specific job for, how much money should go to this job? Or is there no such thing? Maybe there is no such thing. Is the only money that's available for this program money that is specifically appropriated by Congress for this program? Or is there an additional pot of money that the agency has that could be allocated given the agency's other priorities to this program? Which of the two is true with respect to funding?
I don't know definitively because we don't have the records. We don't, in the administrative record, they didn't challenge the funding allocation in any year. We don't thus have in the administrative record how the agency exactly goes about it, except
what
for a few.
What prevents this from being willy-nilly by another name, then?
Well, because what we do have, first, if they had challenged it, we'd have a full record. They haven't challenged it directly. We don't have a full record. So what we do have is what they've attached.
It's facial at this point. Facial at this point. There's not a record of it being violated in practice, but can we tell somehow from the record that we do have what determines whether the external factors make it impossible to meet the established plan, the 30% plan?
In the extra record documents that have been provided to the court, we can tell that it's not willingly.
There may be some examples.
But there's no...
There would be examples if it were purely willy-nilly. There would be examples.
Right.
That's not addressing the question that Judge Garland is raising and that I'm pursuing now.
I don't think the agency here, the prioritization process does not attempt to anticipate where funding may or may not be provided and thus guess where they may be able to move dollars from X to Y to Z. One point I haven't been able to make yet is with respect to discretionary funds, let's say there's a lump sum appropriation to NIMS to do whatever it needs to do under the Magnuson-Stevens Act. I'm not sure those funds exist here, but if they do, the court doesn't review the agency's decision about how to go about doing that. The Lincoln versus Vigil case from the Supreme Court makes clear that it's not reviewable when an agency has a lump sum appropriation, how it draws the lines and what buckets it puts it in.
Can we go to the second question about whether this is a standardized methodology is, once you've decided that there's not enough funding, what is the standard? Do you no longer have a standardized reporting methodology, or do you have one in that when the contingency arises?
We still have the methodology. That's still
you have a standardized methodology. Standardized must mean it
in the rule.
Applies.
In the
rule.
Yeah, I think yes.
And what is that methodology?
Well, there's two places. The first is, and I made this point earlier, but I'll do it really quick. The methodology is that calculates the number of observers absent funding is always applied every year at the outset. That's step one. The rule is clear about that. Step two, at J321, and I think a few other places, sets forth the factors that guide the process when that is invoked. Data needs for a couple different things. Data needs for total allowable catch, data needs for sustaining fisheries, the legal mandates at issue. If, for example, there's an Endangered Species Act mandate that requires a certain number of observers to monitor endangered turtles, for example, that would be triggered. The fishery status and the need to improve data quality. So those factors then make up guidance that shape how the agency goes about analyzing these issues.
This is at JA321, you said? JA321?
That's in the SBRM amendment.
So this is, right, we're in the amendment.
Paragraph 6 or something, is that it? The prioritization process?
Yeah.
The recommended prioritization should be based on : in the middle of the first paragraph on the top of 321.
So let me ask you, if you never had a overall process, and let's say you didn't have a external funding issue, you didn't have that as a constraint, but instead you just adopted this as your method. Every year, we're going to do this. Would that be a standardized, just get the right words here, would that be a standardized reporting methodology?
That would be a much closer case than this one.
That's very good advocacy response, but I want to know. That's the first thing you say, that's not this case. Okay, but I got past that. Now, their argument is that essentially that's what you're doing. And I don't know about the essentially, because we're doing this on the face. But what I want to know is, would this proposal where you say, this is what's really good, 30% CV, however, every year we are going to look at that, we're going to look at this, and we're going to look at categories 1, 2, 3 that you have listed here. And it could come out different every year, it could come out different in different parts of the country. Is that a standardized reporting methodology?
I think it would be. If it explained that these are the factors we're going to look at the end of the day, we're going to apply that and calculate the amount of bycatch.
So standardized methodology is really just a list of factors, which can be balanced by the administrator however the administrator wants?
It would need to be reporting, too. So, I mean, we'd need a prong that explained how the factors have been applied and then report the results of the methodology, because you have to have a standardized reporting methodology. But at the end of the day, the statutory language doesn't mention coefficients of variations, doesn't mention observer numbers that are required, doesn't mention the estimation ratio that
may or may
not be.
How would this be different than what the district court sent back twice?
Well, the problem with it was the district court sent back twice back in 2005. Was that it put funding at the outset and there was no commitment to actually implementing the plan. So it said, we'll check to how much funding we have and then it's our intent to use the money we have to go about monitoring bycatch.
If there isn't a methodology to deal with the externality situation, then aren't we back to the point where you're having an unregulated decision made as to whether we're going to do this or not, just like it was in the prior versions that the district court sent back?
Now, I don't think so. And the district court in this case carefully parsed this and explained the problem with the first cases in 2005 was that the agency hasn't promised to do anything other than try, essentially. Mm-hmm. Here, the agency has promised every single year to calculate what observers should be provided absent funding constraints. And then to do
the best job it can with what money. The words absent funding constraint.
Right.
If there's not a method of determining funding constraints, aren't we back to the same problem that the district court recognized in the first two instances?
I really don't think so, because you could strike this whole prioritization process. You'd have the same methodology. You strike this out. At the end of the day, if Congress says, for the New England fishery, you can only spend $1 million on observers, the agency can only spend $1 million on observers. And at that point, it can't violate that statutory obligation.
Has that ever happened? I think it would be obviously right. Do we have a situation where Congress has said, for the New England fishery, you may only spend this amount, or here's the amount we're giving you for the New England fishery, and you know, implicitly, you have to spend from some other source the rest of it?
And there are certainly other fisheries out there not covered.
Yeah.
We're extra record again, so there's no definitive answer to that. If you look at the
documents, the only reason we're extra record is because you're using that as a hypothetical, and I
right.
want to know
no, if that. If you look at the examples they've cited, there are both line items that are very specific, this much money for ground fish and ground fish only, and then there are more general ones, this much money for the Mid-Atlantic, which is half. We have New England region and Mid-Atlantic.
Is there ever one that says this much money and you can't take from any other source?
I don't know the answer to that. I've not seen that, and I haven't looked at it. At the end of the day, if there is a giant pile of money, though, that's not allocated to any particular use, then we're into the Lincoln versus Vigil scenario anyways, which just means it's unreviewable at this point.
We're not precisely in Lincoln versus Vigil, are we?
Excuse me?
We're not precisely in Lincoln versus Vigil, are we?
We got to the point where there was a general appropriation.
Yeah, that was the stage you'd already reached in Lincoln, wasn't it?
And
then you were the litigation was to direct was seeking to direct the allocation after we had the stage already reached of the agency having to make prioritizations.
Right. I guess the hypothetical I was setting forth.
If there is a congressionally mandated process to be standardized, that's very different. There's no such mandate in Lincoln, was it?
The Lincoln was the agency faced with the general, I think, appropriation mm-hmm. has conflicting
yeah.
obligations.
But
under
we're
the
not there yet. Here we're questioning, or the appellant is questioning, whether you have met the congressional mandate to set a standardization by which that process will be conducted. That's not parallel, is it?
It's not. I'm only addressing the hypothetical.
Right. So that doesn't really
down
answer
the
question here.
Right, where it's not directly at issue given what we have here.
Okay, we again have talked to you also past your allotted time. So we'll give back 2 minutes to the appellant for a moment.
Just 2 points. First, the determination of whether there is a quote-unquote external operational constraint is entirely standardless. All we know is at JA 947 that the agency will decide whether maximizing observers, this is in the third column at the bottom, it will follow the methodology to the extent possible and subject to available resources. That does not cabin the agency's discretion.
Sorry, where is that again?
It's in JA 947 and the third column of last paragraph.
I had turned away from it. 947?
Yes, Your Honor.
That's beautiful.
At sea, fisheries observers will, to the maximum extent possible and subject to available resources, be allocated according to the procedures. So that contains no constraining language. The second point, Your Honor, is that a list of criteria.
It would suggest, if anything, I should think, that funds that are not congressionally restricted to some other purpose will be used for this purpose. That would be the maximum extent possible, mm-hmm. subject to available resources.
I think it leaves to the agency, the regional administrator, the determination of what is available within that non-discretionary funding, and there's no way of knowing how they'll make that determination. The second point is that a list of criteria for developing a methodology to count fish is not a methodology to count fish. Again, at JA 589, the agency defines what a standardized reporting methodology means. It includes a sampling design. That means how it is actually going to put observers on boats, and this is because that is the data collection it's chosen. The criteria for prioritization process is just a framework for developing a methodology in some ad hoc year-to-year process outside the fishery management plan. It is not itself a methodology. That's all, Your Honor.
Can I just ask, is it possible for you to make an as-applied challenge rather than a facial challenge?
We do not think that meaningful judicial review is available given the lack of standards for determining what is an external operational constraint or what funds are available. Moreover, the process is not subject to notice and comment rulemaking, although there is a public review aspect of it.
They announce in advance what the result is of their prioritization process?
They do announce it, and that's some of the documents that we've cited in our reply brief. They do announce it, and there is a part, there's a public meeting by the council in which there can be public participation, but it's not clear that there would be any meaningful judicial review given that the agency has not constrained itself at all in how it will ultimately allocate the observers.
Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted. Call the next case.